Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us today for today's episode of Real Estate Disruptors. Today, we have Lizzie Hofer, the queen of mortgages in Arizona. And she's here to talk about how she went from fired to over $100 million in sales volume. If this is your first time tuning in, I'm Steve Trang, broker owner of Stunning Homes Realty, co-founder of the OfferFast app, and I help people become real estate entrepreneurs. And if you're excited for today's show, give me some thumbs up, give me some hearts. And before we get started, I started this show because I want to give back to our community. I know that I've struggled when I got started. I'm pretty sure you've had some struggles in your business. And we want to shortcut that struggle for as many young leaders as possible. I don't charge a dime for this show. I don't make any money doing this. So all I ask is if you get value out of this show, please tell a friend. Either share this episode, tag a friend below, or tell them your best takeaway from this episode. So don't forget also, this is a live show. So please post your questions and Lizzie will be happy to answer them for you.
So happy.
You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So the first question is, what got you into mortgages?
So it's not a very sexy answer. I was in college and I found myself in a position where I wasn't going to be able to continue if I didn't figure out how to make money fast. Mm-hmm. So I got out the newspaper because that's where you found jobs at that time. And I looked for the highest paying job, and it happened to be as a receptionist at a mortgage company. And that's what got me started.
Okay. And so what were some of the early struggles you faced in that role?
So, I mean, I transitioned a lot. So, like, the good thing is that I've had a lot of opportunity to discover a variety of different roles within mortgages. So I started as a receptionist. I lasted in that position, like, a month and a half before I decided that I wanted to be a dialer. And then I was a dialer for multiple years and then became a processor.
Dialer as in like inbound inquiries? Or
so like real estate agents would call those ISAs.
Okay.
So I was an ISA. And then I worked a lot as a processor. And then in 2008, the market crashed and I was a highly paid processor. And I found myself being laid off and replaced by our receptionist. So it was just a really interesting time. So when I got into mortgages, it was very traditional, lots of FHA, VA, and then it turned into this whole stated no income, no assets. I saw the boom. I saw, you know, when interest rates were like in the high sixes, sevens, mm-hmm. and then they lowered all the way to five. And so I got to see a whole lot of different things happen. And I saw a lot of people who never really took home ownership seriously. And I remember the reaction that my parents gave when I said I was working for a mortgage company. And they were like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. You're working for a mortgage company. I thought it was so prestigious. And then to actually see the people behind the scenes were like kind of Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, I'm being kind. I mean, I think every meeting was like at the strip club. So
it was a different time.
Different time for sure. So it was just really interesting coming from operations. And then by the time I was going to be a loan officer, I was only 25 years old. Mm-hmm. So at 25, you find yourself in a predicament where the people that you know, like, aren't necessarily in a position to buy a home, especially like in the worst economic downturn that our parents and even we had ever seen. So they just weren't in a position. So I had to learn to be really scrappy. And, you know, I was really lucky. I did fail a lot at first. I lived off of like a $10 weekly budget for food and everything.
Wow.
Yeah. It was lots of ramen noodle recipes. And my mom actually paid for me to go to a Brian Buffini seminar, which like kicked off my whole career and how to, you know, work with a database and love on your sphere and what to do. It was the foundation for everything I did for many, many years after. And I credit a lot of all the success I had to that one $500 seminar.
Wow, really? See, I had no idea that you got started with Brian Buffini. It makes sense looking at your business. You know, I that was one of the first coaching programs I went through as well. Wish I took it as well as you did. So, all right. So you got Buffini and you started building your database. And then what did you do after that?
So building a database was really tough. So he talked about like starting a farm and doing door knocking and then meeting people, right? Mm-hmm. So, and his big thing was like the last thing you should be doing is doing the not met activities and really focus on your sphere. But at the time, my sphere wasn't really strong. So I ended up having to focus on like networking and doing not met activities. So I figured I didn't want to get, you know, mugged or kidnapped. So I started my first farm at the Arrowhead Mall. And I worked the, like, small business owners like nobody else. Like, I went there every single day, sat at the model home kiosk for like multiple years, like every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
You were sitting in the kiosk. You were the one that's like harassing people when they're walking
100%.
By.
100%. And then I brought everyone coffee. So I like agents, the puppet shop, the perfume ladies, the everyone I could meet. I just wanted to do like my mayor campaign in an area that was air conditioned and safe.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And that what year was that?
That was 2008 to probably like 2011.
Okay.
So I did that for a long time. And like, you know, a lot of people will give me pushback on like starting things like farming or door knocking and or like even meeting business people.
Yeah.
And I just think about like if I had to start over again, I'd probably do something similar.
Well, it was effective. And, you know, that's actually how we met. Not through the mall. But you came over to my office. So we're at List of Pros, Baseline and Mill, and my old office is, I can hit it with a baseball from here. And you had stopped by. It was a pop by. So it was Brian and Buffini. And you came by with the 7 levels of communication, dropped it off. We had a great meeting. And then that's how you planted that seed.
Yes.
So clearly, you know, it worked.
Well, and it took like 6 years of follow-up, right? Because the first time I met you, I was very unqualified to be your partner.
Well, right? I was also probably not a great partner at that time. So, okay, so why do you think you're so determined and passionate in your role as a loan officer?
So that's a really loaded question because I think it's not just being a loan officer. I think I'm just passionate in general about things. And I think it's just because my entire life I've just had to be really scrappy. And I've been really fortunate to understand the things that motivate me. And I have a lot of dysfunctions. Like, I have a lot of brokenness about my life. And those things have always been really clear to me. So, like, I grew up in a family that was up and down financially. There were, like, 2 times in my life where the school bus pulled up to my house and the electricity guy was, like, shutting the lights off. And I remember those things were like really like, that's never going to happen to me when I get older. And, you know, I have an interesting relationship with my mom too. So like, she was a big driver for me for a really long time. And I was like, I'm just never going to ask for help. So in my family, everybody's been like traditional government jobs, engineers. They're all very, very smart.
Yeah.
I'm actually probably like the dumbest one of all of us. Which serves me well because I didn't go into engineering and I went into like relationship making. And I just didn't want to fail. I didn't want to be the one that just didn't make it. So I've always been really scrappy and understood that like your dysfunctions, even though they're the things that make us the most ashamed and the most embarrassed, are also the things that are the greatest motivators.
Okay. And then we had talked about before about, you know, finding your why. So how did you go through and find your why?
So finding a why is really hard because most of the time when people talk about a why, they talk about, you know, like saving the starving kids in the third world country, or they talk about their family and their kids and all those things. And while everyone, I believe, truly does want to help people, I think that our greatest motivators are always the things that have personally impacted us the most. So that's the one thing that I think I've always been really gifted in, is I really understand what motivates me, what like brings out the biggest emotions. And I think that if you're a person who's trying to look for your why, I think you need to figure out like, well, one, why did I decide to do what I'm doing? And you're going to give yourself some superficial answer like, I don't want a boss, or I want a flexible schedule.
Right. I mean, if everything works out just fine, we'll have that flexible schedule.
Yes. And so like, if you start thinking there and you're like, well, why is that important to me? And then you start going into like, I really hate when people tell me what to do. And then you're like, well, why? Why do you hate when people tell? And then it turns out that you like had some sort of thing that happened to you and you never felt like you had control in your life. And once you hit on it, the second that you feel embarrassed or emotional, that's your why.
Right.
Right. Like if you can't say it out loud, that's what it is. And so just being really, really connected to that has been like my superpower, I guess.
Oh, that's cool. Well, that's going to be one of the next questions, is what do you consider to be your superpower? Do you want to elaborate on that or do you want to move on?
Well, I think that is the superpower. It's right, really figuring out what my why is, but then I also can bring it out in people, right?
Okay.
Just keep asking the right questions. And I mean, if you've met with me, it's not uncommon to like cry the first time.
Yeah.
And not cry because I've hurt you, but cry because we've got somewhere real. very fast.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beautiful part of like any kind of relationships, is that you're having a relationship with someone you trust, someone that you know that cares, and then someone that you know can really bring out the best in you.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So going back, you know, the title of the show, from fired to 100 million, let's start with the fired.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that story.
So lots of dysfunction in my life. So I have a very, so if you're familiar with the DISC test, I have a super high I, and then my secondary characteristic is a high C.
Mm-hmm.
So I am inclined to please people, but I also need it to be perfect and systematized.
Right. And highly abnormal characteristic or combination.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it really tough for me to be successful in my job, because I'm a very emotional perfectionist. And so I had a business partner, and I wanted to be independent. And unfortunately, we had a really colorful, toxic relationship. And it just wasn't going very well. And I was emotional and just not great to be around. And when you're not great to be around, super emotional. And I never really showed my worth. Like, I always wanted to be the one behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked like the troublemaker. So I got fired from my job, and rightfully so, because I just was not meeting any of their core values. But it was like the best thing that happened to me, because it forced me to then rediscover my why. Like, why was I being so emotional?
Right.
And it got me to realize that, like, I just don't like letting people down, and I don't like being in a system that lets people down. And so it was such a beautiful thing for me to be able to, like, transform and create and build something new. And I read this book, Delivering Happiness, which is ultimately why you and I ended up reconnecting.
Right.
And it just changed my entire trajectory of life, like where I was going, what I wanted to do with customers, what I wanted to provide, and who I wanted to be. And so it got me on to the wow process that people know us for, you know, and just being that person that provided value versus what I got. And so I got fired and then immediately started getting to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm really scrappy, and I don't let people tell me I'm going to fail. So one of the most powerful things that was said to me during that meeting was that they thought that I was a weak link between me and my old business partner.
You, as in, like, you were dragging?
I was dragging them down.
Wow.
I know. but you know what? I think that perception is reality, and I did not obviously show my value at mm-hmm. all. But it was those words that, like, hung with me the entire time. And so every single time I wanted to give up, I was like, hell no, I'm not going to be the weak link.
Right.
And I never wanted to go down in history as the girl who got fired and was a disaster and sued them and was horrible and just ended up being exactly what they fired her for.
Yeah.
So I really did a whole lot of, like, introspection. I, like, got into coaching. I, like, really submitted at that time and was like, okay, you tell me what to do. And then I went to therapy. Let's see, what else? I read a lot of books. I took a lot of leadership stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just really was focused on, like, changing the negative things about me, and then using, like, if you've ever been fired in your life, and everyone has been fired at least one time, it's, like, quite possibly the most humbling experience of your whole entire life.
Yeah. I'm not everything I thought I was.
So it like took me down to my core, but allowed me to, like, build something even better in its place.
So you said something that was interesting. You said that, you know, that your core values didn't line up with their core values, but, you know, we've done business together for over 2 years now, and I think our core values line up very well. So do you feel like you had different core values then, or what was the clash between yours and theirs?
Well, okay. So core values is tricky, because you can have core values when it comes to customers, and you can have core values for the culture you're building in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And so you and I have, like, the exact same client customer care goals, right?
So right.
Client first every single time.
Yes.
And so, but, like, at the time, I just didn't know how to communicate needs, mm-hmm. right? So instead of communicating needs, I would complain without solutions, and I would get angry, and not just like a level 5 angry. It was mostly like a level 9 or 10 angry. And you just can't be that person in a culture, in an environment. And, like, you know, it's super funny, because I love Darren Hardy to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I was the one that introduced him to, like, most people in my life. And he was ultimately the person that told them they should fire me.
Well, you told me like you were involved in getting him out there, and then they met with him. And they talked about whatever.
No, they went on to like take his courses later on. And then it was like, he was just like, well, you just have to get rid of this person. She's taking up all your time, all your emotion. You know, she doesn't fit in with the culture you're looking at building. And at the time, they were looking at building like a mega team versus like really running a branch. And it just, what a square peg round hole. And I just wasn't a really good communicator. Like, right, super people pleaser and perfectionist is really hard to, like, not be the boss.
Well, you're the boss lady now.
So now I'm the boss.
So it's funny you also mentioned Darren Hardy and telling him to fire people, because I've gone to two different one of his events. One was Insane Productivity Live, and the other was the High Performance Forum. And each time I went, he kind of says, you know, there's someone on your mind right now that you need to fire. I was like, okay. And I started thinking about it. And each time I went to an event, I fired two people. I feel kind of bad about it, but it was the right decision for our company core values and, you know, how everything was working together.
And you never know, those things could be like the pivotal changing moment in their life. Because I think about it and I'm like, God, would I still be the same person today if I hadn't been fired, if I hadn't been rocked to my core? And I don't think I would have been, because I think true change happens when you're in pain.
Yeah.
Right? Like something bad happen and it makes you reevaluate and you decide, okay, at this moment in time, I'm going to become a better person.
Right. So now you're going through this journey and introspection, and obviously you've improved, right? Made a lot of changes. So how did you go and pick up the pieces? I mean, that's all great for mindset. How did you pick up the pieces logistically to get your business to where it is today?
So having taken that back to the Brian Buffini, so he has this thing called a confession letter.
Right.
And I have just been one of those people that understood that, like, the more authentic and more vulnerable you are and just, like, just lay it out, people will help you, right? So when I was a broke 25-year-old, I was like, look, I'm a broke 25-year-old, but no one is going to work harder for you. No one's going to be more available to you. Look, I have nothing to do other than service you. And being able to communicate that story has been powerful. But then, so when I got fired, it was the same deal. It was like, guys, I became a work terrorist. I like kind of try to make it funny, right? Mm-hmm. So I became a work terrorist and I got fired from my job. I can't believe I've lost my way, but I've never been more humble and more willing to learn and more willing to take your feedback than I am right now. And I promise, if you give me a second chance, I'm never going to lose your trust again. And so that was the message. I put it out on Facebook. I took out an ad for my long lost clients. I sent out a letter. I called everyone. I did not hide from this at all. Like, it was like literally fired on Friday. I picked up the phone. Actually, I spent all Saturday crying. And then on Sunday, I picked up the phone and I started calling everyone. And it was crazy to see the amount of people that wanted to see me succeed and help me.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was just willing to say, it was all my fault. This is what's wrong. I'm going to change. And here's what I need, if you're willing to help me. And so I did that. Within that weekend, though, I pulled together 17 loans. Like, the first month I was at Prospect, I closed 27 deals. And it was literally because all of the amazing people that I have in my life were, like, rallying behind me and my team. And also, I will tell you that, logistically speaking, there's no way I could have done it without Caden and Alejandra and Sam. They, it was like Jerry Maguire style. They're like, okay, well, we're going to offer your people jobs. And I was like, well, we're going to see who they want to work for. Thank God they came. I had four assistants at the time, and three came with me.
Wow.
So they were amazing. And so we all got on the phones. We literally had no laptops. We had, they used one of my, like, Apple, and we took all our apps on the paper. We phoned everybody with our cell phones. I mean, it was crazy. But they were super committed. All we did was spend, it was like 8 hours on the phone dialing. And we were able to turn a business around, like, super fast. But it was no excuses. It wasn't like, hey, I need a logo, or hey, I need this, or hey, I need this to be successful. It was like, hey, here, I do the core training.
Right.
So we have a form called the Lead Tracker. And the Lead Tracker keeps all your names and phone numbers and emails. And I got to keep those, right? Because I was a paper person.
Good. Yeah.
So we called every single lead I had, every single referral partner I had in my phone. I took out the ads. I mean, we just got to work from the moment we got there.
And what year was all this?
That was, I think, 2013. I think 2013. It's either been 4 or 5 years now.
Okay. And so from there, because I think you mentioned also, like, you connected with everyone through Facebook as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that how'd that play into a role in your rebuilding your database?
So I didn't have everyone's phone numbers, right? But I did try to friend everyone on Facebook. So at the time, Facebook allowed you to sync your phone contacts with people on Facebook. So I did, I did the sync, and then I uploaded that confession letter, and then I started messaging everyone and contacting everyone and getting contact information for everyone.
Right. Well, that's the definition of scrappy.
Yeah, it's just like a lot of calling. Like, there's no replacement for calling and direct outreach. There just isn't, you know.
Well, our last guest, Brent Daniels, is talking about talk to people. And that's it. Just get out there and just talk to people. Don't do anything else. So what does your organization look like today then?
So it's really different. So imagine like a room with people with no, with just their cell phones and paper and one computer. So now we're located in the Biltmore. I have a really beautiful space in the Anchor Center. I have 20 people that work directly for me, and then I have about 40 branch employees. We're going to close $200 million this year as a branch, which I'm super excited about.
So we got to update the title.
But, I mean, and it's, we're very high tech and high touch.
Okay. And then, you know, one of the things, challenges that we all have as realtors is staying in touch with the lead. So how are you able to stay in such great communication and contact with the leads?
So that's always something that we focus on, right? And it's a marker that I think will always never be perfect, and something that you have to constantly work on all the time. I have built out Salesforce so that things are really automated and constantly bringing things to the forefront, so that we're not having to remember it, because we're not robots and we're humans. And you know, I read a statistic once that said that 80% of filed information is never referenced again. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's actually in a book called When. It's a really good read. So if you're putting all of your leads into a CRM, but you're not in the habit of like going to that CRM, it's like that's referenced information.
Right.
So I just make it so that there's a ton of workflows and a ton of things that remind us to keep in touch with them.
So let's say someone's brand new into mortgages. What should be their first step, first two, three steps for them to get started?
So whether you're in mortgages or real estate or any kind of sales, the very first thing that you need to do is comprise a database. And that database, I would break it down into three different people. If you've never had a past client, you're going to break it up into two. But it's influencers, so people who have an impact within their community or their group of friends or their business. And then it's business contacts, right? So people that you're meeting with, that they understand the networking game, they understand referrals, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch your back kind of thing.
Right.
And you want to get at least 150 people in there. Okay. And then from that list of 150 people, you categorize the day. You figure out like, you know, so on Mondays, I call my favorite people. Right. And then on Tuesdays, I do update calls. And then on Wednesday, I'm calling my database. If you don't have a database, you're calling leads. Thursday, you're calling your hot leads. So you're getting them in the car on Saturday. Right. Or you're going to visit with them on Friday. And then Friday's business people.
Right.
Right. So I just comprise a list, figure out a daily theme, right? And then like I would contact no less than 60 people a week, and not the same people, different people.
Wow. 60.
And then figure out a good milk route. So I am better in person than I am ever going to be on the phone. Even though I like had multiple years as an ISA, I think I'm just better in person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that everyone should be able to sell better in person. So I think that's great, right? So I think having that phone touch is amazing. That's way better than texts and emails and whatever people are using now. And then what's even better than a phone touch is a face-to-face.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so if a milk route is typically, so that mall route that I did where I like would bring people coffee, that was my milk route. It's like going to see the security guards, going to talk to the Dillard sales ladies, going to talk to the puppet shop and the cigar shop and all those different, the timeshare people, right? Just getting to know them. I mean, that's where I built my first clientele.
Wow. Now, what would you consider to be some of your critical components to your success today? Like, what are the three tools that you cannot do without today?
A database is number one, right? And I think anybody in sales will tell you that a database is number one. And then having a structured system for follow-up, right? Because, like, a database is a tool, really, right? And what you do with that tool is really the most important thing, but you can't do the action without the tool.
Yeah.
Right. So it's having a really good system, a database. And then I would say being able to communicate your vision within stories, right? Mm. So being able to, you know, connect with people by, so like I've told, I started a blog this year just because I used to write these really long Facebook posts and everyone was like, you should just start a blog. And so I started a blog, but it was based on the idea that I really want to be able to share pain, but then also give you the tactics for how I solved my problem. So like I wrote one on how to get out of debt, and I wrote one about how I became, you know, what happened for to make me a receptionist to where I am today. You know, things I learned since I was 35, and I have a series of other ones. So right, the way that you can communicate your why, right, and that it provides value for other people in a story, I think is super valuable. And I think it's the way that marketing is going nowadays.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, the blog that you're doing is fantastic, but I wouldn't stop putting the stories on Facebook too. I will do both.
I do. Yeah. So like, as I'm talking about like why I wrote the blog, I mean, it typically comes with a very long Facebook post, which is not as long. And it comes with cool photos.
Okay. And then I think a lot of what you're talking about today is going to be extremely effective for anybody in any industry. I don't think it's limited to mortgages. I don't think it's limited to real estate sales. So is there anything else you'd like to teach or, you know, present to all the young entrepreneurs that are trying to get into any industry?
Yeah, I would say that like most of the stuff that I learn nowadays isn't from real estate or from mortgage professionals. I'm taking a lot of notes from the restaurant industry. I'm taking lots of notes from influencers. Lots of notes from like hospitality. Like I literally was, my property manager at the Anchor Center is like somebody I'm really trying to replicate their customer service. I've never been happier with a landlord in my entire life.
What are some examples of things they've done that are blown you away?
So they are really good at good Popeyes, right? Like every month they drop off something. They're constant with their communication, letting us know what's going on and what additional features they have, like car washes. They bring in food trucks on a weekly basis. They brought in an ice cream truck. I mean, they're just very like proactive in their communication, and it's always like a one up. And I have had issues, don't get me wrong, with the office, like there's a pipe that broke or like the sink didn't work, and I've never even thought once about leaving because of how well they take care of us. And I thought about that, and I'm like, God, I want people to rave about me the way I'm raving about my property manager.
Well, I kind of want to maybe move over there now. If I didn't live in Chandler, maybe I move my office a little bit closer to you.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rent anywhere else.
So what are some of the greatest lessons you've learned?
I think the biggest thing is, and I'm so bummed. So it was like a Chinese proverb that I can't remember, but I remember the gist, okay?
Okay.
And it was that if you aren't humble, you can't learn anything. So if you think you know everything, like you're just unteachable, uncoachable. And somebody said that to me right before I got fired.
Oh.
And I thought, and it wasn't like not the people firing me. It was like somebody else said they quoted the proverb and then.
It wasn't necessarily directed at you. It was like, hey, check this out.
I'm sure it was directed at me in a really nice way.
Okay.
Like, you know, like, hey, have you ever heard this? So that was one of the most impactful things. And so I always really, really try to stay humble because I know that it's not me. Like, you know, as team leads, we just get to take credit for everything, right? But there's like 20 people that work super hard on my team that like blood, sweat, and tears that, you know, don't get the credit that I do.
Right.
Right. So like, I know that this is not me. This is like a, like an accumulation of everything that the team does, which by the way, shout out team, if you're listening to this, I love you and couldn't do this job without you. So always stay humble and then always want to learn.
Yeah.
Like things are constantly changing. Like this industry is never going to stay the same. I mean, we're already in a big shift right now, in case you can't feel it. We're in shifting. And, you know, people are terrified that they're going to lose their jobs to technology or big, you know, investors. And what do we do next? And it's like, well, these are the types of markets that build people, right? This is like when you get the most market share. So just always be willing to learn, stay humble. And then the third thing is like, never lose, like, you got to be scrappy.
Right.
Right. Like, if you aren't scrappy, you're dying.
Well, and I like, you know, to touch on that, the part about it's changing. I think not only is it changing, but it's going to keep changing faster. So if you're not staying on top of it, you're only going to fall further and further behind. And I think the first lesson you mentioned about the learning And the day you stop learning is that, you know, is when things start falling apart. So I think that's one of the core values that, it's our first core value for studying homes is growth. And is that you have to be willing to learn, because if you're not willing to learn, then what are you even doing? Like, I don't even want to hang around with you at this point, right? Because you're not going to get better. You're going to be stuck at this level and then go down from here. It's not even going to be fun hanging around with you.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, so what are you learning right now?
So I've actually been really studying time management and, like, not just, like, a schedule. I've really dove deep into understanding the science behind, you know, our daily schedules, our circadian rhythms, you know, when I can be the most effective. I just think that, like, we're trying to improve 1% a day.
Right.
And, like, inefficiencies, like, when are you going to be at your best in sales? Mm-hmm. Right? Or when am I going to make the best decisions? Or when should I be having meetings? So that's really what I'm focusing in right now, because I just want to hone those skills in really good, because there's only so much time in a day.
Yeah.
And in case you can't notice, I'm about to pop out my third babes. So I got to figure out how to do the same amount of work in a shorter amount of time.
Right. So right now, is there any, I think you mentioned When was the book. Right now, that's your favorite book when it comes to time management, or what?
So I've read a couple books. So When I thought was the most interesting, because it was a totally different perspective on time management. It was like really a bunch of science, which I kind of geek out on that kind of stuff. And then I'm co-reading this book called The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. The book was recommended to me like more times than any other book has ever been recommended to me. And I couldn't read it because the name is so cheesy. Sorry, Chet Holmes. But it's a brilliant, still, sorry, Chet Holmes. But the book is brilliant.
Yeah, the book's amazing.
Yeah, and it has nothing, it's like, I feel like the title is misleading, right? Like, I guess you could become the ultimate sales machine, but it's really on management, time management, productivity. I mean, the book is really, really smart.
There's a lot of really good content in just one book.
In a chapter, too, I was like, three chapters in and I was like, this is the best book I've ever read.
And so
that book, and then I'm trying to think of what other one I was thinking of, but it slipped my mind. Obviously, okay. Wasn't my favorite book.
So how has failure shaped your life?
I think that failure is the only thing that has really shaped my life up until this point. I think the coolest thing about where I'm at today is I just have failed so many times. I think that just learning from those failures and getting better and better each time is big. But the fact that I fail a lot means I also win a lot.
Yeah.
Like, one of the coolest things that Darren Hardy ever said to me in a group of people was that the pendulum can never swing in just one direction. So you can never just fail.
Right.
But so you'll succeed just as many times so long as you continue to try.
Yeah.
And it's always just been beautiful for me. That was one of my favorite blog posts was I was like, I just don't believe that there's any real failure out there.
Yeah.
Because, like, the worst thing that happens is you just learn something super important that'll change your life and make things better for the future, so long as you're humble enough to accept the lesson.
Well, and I think it's not just the failing, right? There's a lot of people that will try something and they fail. It's like, well, I tried and it was over. I think it's what you said was that the failure and then the introspection and then what did I learn from it? And I want to add to that, you want to fail as fast as you can, as many times as you can, because the more you fail, the better you're going to get.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to fail fast, though, because I am a high C personality. Mm-hmm. I really have to think about all of the steps and all the measurables and all the things. So I fail kind of slowly.
Right.
But when I fail, it's really big. So I really learn.
Everyone knows about it. Okay, so what have you read that everyone should read? I know we've already mentioned a few books already, but what book have you read that's been super impactful?
So I've read a couple books that have been super impactful. The other book that I was thinking of that I forgot was Getting Things Done by David Allen.
Oh, I've heard amazing things about that one.
Yeah, that book really was also really amazing. But the most impactful book I would say to read, if you're only going to read one business book, is The Compound Effect. So that's why I felt like so in love with Darren Hardy. I was like, oh my God, this guy totally gets it. And I would read that book religiously every single year. It's actually inspired by a book called Slight Edge, too. So both those books are really huge. But it just talks about all the little things that you do on a daily basis. Like the one little action means nothing.
Right.
But then over the course of time, that little action compounds to mean something. And so that book I thought was huge. I think if you're just beginning in sales in real estate or mortgages, you should read The 7 Levels or Mr. Schmooze, I think. And then if you're really looking to build a business, Delivering Happiness, I think, was a total game changer for me.
Yeah, that's a must read for my team. Yeah. So there's a lot of books that I love, but Delivering Happiness is a must read, because if you want to understand our company culture, you have to love this book. So, okay. And then what have you done that everybody should do?
What have I done that everybody should do? I think getting coaching is something that everybody should do. I think that there's something to be said for accountability and having to tell people out loud if you've actually done the thing that you said you were going to, that moves the needle. It's kind of like confession, right? There's lots of people who don't really believe in it, but when you really got to tell someone who's going to judge you on the other side,
yeah,
at least for me, it's very impactful. But it also gives you like a different perspective on business.
Yeah.
Right? So I've never had people who understood what I did in my circle. You know, everyone, you know, they look at real estate agents or they look at loan officers and they're like, oh yeah, your job looks so fun.
Mm-hmm.
You just like golf and sleep all the time.
And make big checks.
Yeah, I know. Right? It's like, oh, I haven't had a good sleep in a long time. So I just feel like having other people that could relate to me and that I could, you know, talk about like employee struggles or talk about, you know, how to overcome objections in my industry, I think it's so super crucial. And when you don't have that kind of, you know, ability to bounce off those ideas, I think you're just kind of stuck.
Right.
And, you know, I think they said the definition of insanity was doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result.
Right.
Well, coaching helps you not be insane.
Is there any particular coaching program that you would endorse at the moment?
There's so many, right? Mm-hmm. There's multiple ways to skin a cat. I mean, for me, the core has been super life-changing. I mean, they're the reason that my business has grown. So when I was a top producer and got fired, I did 167 loans that year. And
that's
then
pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. No, I'm not.
You got fired doing 167 loans?
I did. You have to be a real big, you know, to get fired. So I did, but the next year, being coached by the core, I did 238 loans.
Okay.
And then 412, and then 539, and then 634, and this year we're going to close 800.
Yeah.
Right? So like that kind of momentum and training, it happens because you're being trained.
Right.
Right? Not because I just figured it out myself. It's because I had really good guidance and people that were constantly holding me accountable. So if it's one thing that you can do for your business, it's get coached sooner.
And I think that, you know, you probably don't want to plug it, so I'll plug it for you, is that you coach real estate agents too to help them build up their business.
Yeah, I coach loan officers and real estate agents, yeah.
And then another thing that you didn't touch on is that you also run a mastermind.
I do.
So you want to talk about masterminding.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the more, so like you're the sum total of the five people, I really feel like I'm just like regurgitating a bunch of good quotes.
Yeah.
Of the five people that you hang out with the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you always want to be the dumbest person in every room. And masterminding is kind of what that makes me, right? I like get the best people in my industry together to share ideas. And what's beautiful about masterminding, if you find the right people who are like willing to give, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not like of a scarcity mindset, you can come up with some of the coolest, neatest ideas. And or you can find out that the idea that you thought was so super amazing, someone's tried 12 different times and this is how they failed at it. And it maybe not is such a great, brilliant idea. I mean, it's just crazy to see like, you know, how all these brilliant people do their job and how different all of them are and how they execute. I mean, it's just, it's super amazing.
So let me take the time now to apologize for all those times I've shut you down in the masterminds.
Like, not such a good idea.
So why do you think some of the people fail when they get into mortgages?
I think people fail for a variety of reasons. But I think that people fail because of fear, like bottom line. It's like they're afraid of asking people for business. They're afraid of looking needy. They're afraid of coming off as a salesperson. They're afraid of, you know, doing the activities. They're afraid of getting rejected. I mean, it's just like failure to launch. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. And like, like, this is what's hard. You are a salesperson.
Mm-hmm. Embrace it.
Yes, but if you're only out for what's in it for you, mm-hmm. you should be afraid.
Right.
Because who wants to work with this show me the money guy? Mm-hmm. Everyone's rooting for Jerry Maguire. No one really likes that guy.
Yeah.
Right. So like, you just want to be the person who's like, how can I provide you value? And realize that if you're not doing it, what is preventing you from doing it? And then write that list out and then tackle step one, step two, step three, step four. But you can't be failure to do something. Right. Like, this is one of those industries that like will chew you up and spit you out.
Right.
And it's like you'll feel amazing one minute and then get an angry text the next minute and feel like you suck. I mean, there's nothing for it. So you got to have really thick skin, but you also have to be willing to accept that you are not perfect and learn how to say a really good I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And everything will work out.
That's really good. The writing out all the reasons why you don't want to do it or you can't do it or whatever, and then solving each one by one. That's brilliant. That's the first time I've heard that. So
it's how I coach my team members.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like awesome. or just in general, like, this is actually really good scripting. So like, if somebody doesn't want to do something, you're mm-hmm. like, okay, so I know you don't want to do this, you're probably never going to do this, but if you did do this, what would have to happen to mm-hmm. make that happen?
Yeah.
And then they tell you and you're like, so if I make all this happen, so then you'll say yes? And then
no.
They can't say no because they've just told you why.
Yeah.
So but then you're removing obstacles. If you're right. the boss, that's your job, right? Yeah. You want them to do something. They don't want to do it. Find out why and fix it.
And I think there's two things that have been really helpful for me with my business that I learned from you. One of them is the WOW program. Can we talk about the WOW program?
Yeah. So the WOW program I came up with after delivering happiness. So mm-hmm. that this was my version of that, right? It was, how do I show people how much they mean to me?
Yeah.
Right. And how, because I, like, that's the one thing that I've always struggled with, because I am a total, like, people pleaser at heart. Mm. And I just never want people to think that, like, I took more than I ever gave. And I wanted them to know that, like, their life meant something to me outside of their mortgage transaction. So I started paying attention to their life events and started paying attention to, like, things that were important to them or, you know, birthdays. I mean, birthdays have been a really big thing. If you know me or follow me, you know, I'm a good sprinkles cupcake girl. Mm-hmm. And so just making people feel loved and special, right? So there's a book called The Five Love Languages, and it mm-hmm. talks about all the universal love languages. But gifts is pretty much like either on the top or right in the middle for most people.
Yeah.
And so the WOW program is just centered around honoring all the people that are special in my life and making sure that they know that they're special to me and not just because of their home loan.
Yeah. And then the other thing was the referral script on the Tuesday calls. You want to go through that real quick?
Yeah. So one of our value adds is that, you know, we are going to, because I know that most real estate agents are scared of asking for referrals, mm-hmm. right? And they don't want to ask unless they've done a perfect job. So one of the things that my team does is ask for referrals for them. Mm-hmm. So on every Tuesday, we give an update for their home loan. And we ask them a series of questions. We ask them on a scale of 1 to 10 if we have met their needs. And if they give us anything less than an 8, we will not ask for a referral, just, you know. But then the next question will be, well, what would it take to get to a 10? Or mm-hmm. if it's a 10, it's like, why is that a 10? So I could go report back to my team and make sure that we keep doing this.
Yeah.
And then, is there anything else that I can do for you? Are you sure there's nothing else I can do for you? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure we're doing everything we can for you. Right. Okay. So if there is nothing else, it would mean a lot to me if you knew of anybody that was looking to buy or sell in the last week, if you would give them our information. Do mm-hmm. you know of anyone?
That's powerful. In fact, I actually have that printed and we call it the Cadence script.
It is the Cadence script.
So I give it to my people and I say, hey, you know, when you're talking to them, we're updating them, use the script. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, hey, we didn't get that many referrals this week. You know, did you use the Cadence script?
You know, that it's crazy because I think you just have to ask, but you cannot ask unless you're really trying to go above and beyond.
Right. So a random question here. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
10.
10?
Yeah. I mean, people who know me probably say more than 10. I mean, I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like so many things in one.
All right. So thank you so much for, you know, being on the show. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, mm-hmm. what is the best way to do that?
So the best way to get a hold of me is contacting me through our website, which is lizzyhofer.com. So LIZYHOEFF as in Frank, ER.com. And you can call me on my team line, which is 480-818-6222.
Perfect. And again, if you guys like this show, please share this episode right now. And we are going to be here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. We got Kevin Kaufman, a real living rock star. Last year, his team sold 552 houses for just shy of $150 million in sales volume. And be sure to visit our website, realestatedisruptors.com, to find out more about our upcoming events. We did have a happy hour last night. It was great. We had some amazing knowledge being shared. So if you want to find out more about the next event, please do check out there. And again, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.